Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry. This week, Jeremy Hunt delivered his first budget proper. And I'm sure listeners know you're allowed to have an alcoholic drink if you are the Chancellor whilst you're delivering the budget. Frankly, I need an alcoholic drink to get through it. And by 1 p.m., I was half a bottle of vodka deep.
Can't we give him some E? I mean, he loves E's.
Well, how did you get through it, Emma?
Well, literally, I'm not even kidding. I genuinely stuck an alarm on my phone for the end and snoozed through it.
Right. I confess I watched the whole hour.
It was on the telly. It was just coming to me slightly through osmosis.
Right. And I confess watching Sir Keir Starmer's response was all a bit much for me, and I went for some fresh air. But we're going to come to the budget a bit later. But first, we're going to have to...
At least has some fucking blood in his vein.
I have to say, I couldn't face it. But we're going to start...
you didn't watch it, so you don't know that he had some blood in his veins. But well, my God.
We're going to start anyway, talking with people with a bit of oomph. With Gary Lineker. I've given him a knighthood now. I think that's okay. Because it's
I
a story
that's... that long if we do get a change of government.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken... over the media discourse for well over a week. I wrote a piece saying this was all a bit ridiculous because it totally diverted from the real story, which was discussing properly and thoroughly and giving it the scrutiny it deserved, the asylum policy put forward by the government. There's a few bits. You and I have both written on it. I thought your piece was great.
As was yours.
Thank you. Yes, I said I thought it was just a complete nonsense that this took over. The BBC, I was going to say shot itself in the foot, but frankly, it blew its own face off for a few days. To wreck a week, like the BBC doesn't get much sports coverage. To have wrecked a week of your sports coverage over this was nonsense. I have to say, Gary Lineker was not the only person who made these comparisons, but anyone who made those kind of 1930s Germany comparisons, I thought was very crass, but that was not...
I'm going to slightly disagree with you on that.
Okay.
Look, the Holocaust itself was a singular event that we should be really, really cautious of referring to. But it is, he did not refer to the Holocaust.
But he
referred to the language that led to Nazism. And actually, we cannot not learn lessons from that history. And we are in a moment where we have a Home Secretary talking about people fleeing and in danger and desperate for their lives as invading us. I don't think that's actually... I think we have to be able to compare sometimes to what happened that allowed Nazism to flourish.
But parallels in history are very important to make. I just think you have to be deeply, deeply, deeply careful of any language that even risks trivialising Holocaust remembrance and Holocaust education. But the point is, actually, that that was not why Gary Lineker was taken off air.
No. I mean, yeah, he could he have phrased it better? Yes, probably. But again, I do, as I say, I do have a worry that our reverence, our rightful reverence of that history, stops us talking about the parallels properly.
Sure, but I mean, let's not get into that debate here because it's not what the show's
for. That's not what we're talking about. But yeah, that wasn't why it was taken off the air.
One, it wasn't. I will reiterate that I think the comparisons are not appropriate, but even with the language, but we can call out the language, and we should call out the language, because some of what's been said around the asylum legislation has been nasty. But again, that is not why Gary Lineker was taken off air. He was taken off the air on the premise of, you know, failing an impartiality test. We just, you know, there's all sorts of people we could name, from Andrew Neil to Prue Leith to Jeremy Clarkson to Chris Packham to all these people who are freelancers who have made their political or wider worldviews known whilst also very capably presenting on the BBC. I think the most pertinent case is that of Andrew Neil, who chaired The Spectator whilst also conducting major political interviews for the BBC.
Also,
none of the others are political.
But impartiality is not just about politics. I know, you know how little I care about football, right?
I'm aware.
And yet I know who Gary Lineker supports. I know who Alan Shearer supports. I know who Ian Wright supports. So how is it that given that's the actual topic that they're there on telly to talk about every single week, that's not a problem?
Yeah, well, and also actually, frankly, part of the charm of having them on, and it's deliberately done that they cover the teams they support slash have played for. But the key point here is the BBC completely blew itself up over this. There was no risk of impartiality. These are freelancers. He was not... It was just a bizarre decision to pick this fight. Yes, it annoyed some of the madder
Tories.
Conservative backbenchers and a few commentators on the right. And they should have just let it blown over. And I don't understand why they got in this way. And the point both you and I made in sort of slightly different ways over the piece, in our pieces, was that if you take on sport, and in this country, particularly football, but sport in general, and you're a different kind of institution, especially if you're a politician or an executive of some kind, you are not going to win.
No, because...
You can't win.
It was fascinating that the general public polled about small boats policy generally in favour, polled about whether Gary Lineker could criticise small boats policy generally in favour, because the public aren't stupid. And we've got to stop treating them like they are and like they don't understand nuance.
Yeah.
Ultimately, they know that Gary Lineker is a sportsman and a sports commentator.
Yeah.
And sport is where we live.
Yep.
I don't live there.
No.
I live a long way from there. I live in the theatre. But even me, there are moments that I can talk to you about at great length that are sporting moments that just get me.
Yep.
And they're not even necessarily sporting triumphs, although in my piece I put links to the BBC team celebrating.
Yeah, Mo I couldn't Farah. Watch it because I'd have burst into tears. But yes.
But yeah, I burst into tears. Mo Farah winning and the sports team celebrating. And at the other end, Derek Redmond being helped to limp around the end. So I'm literally welling up now. The limping around the end of his track with his father. That's human. It's the most human. And that's what sport is.
Yeah, sport is... because of the emotional connections people have with various moments, for me, Gazza sliding into the post in Euro 96 instead of putting the ball in the net and winning it for England.
Although I have to say, that cheeky, I apologise to our Scottish listeners.
No, you're going to do it.
Cheeky flip over the Scottish into the goal was the best goal.
Over Colin Hendry's head. You see, all these, you know, can I just reiterate? Emma doesn't know anything about football.
No, I don't. And this is the point.
Yeah. Basically, politicians, institutional executives need to learn you will not beat, you will not take on sport and win.
I was so impressed, not just with Gary Lineker, but with the fact that all of his colleagues stood up and went, no, hang on.
Well, we're this brings me to a question, actually, I really want to ask you. Because of your kind of strategic comms work. Because to me, there seemed to be no forward thinking from the BBC on two things. So this is what I want to ask you on two different questions. One, how did the BBC not realise if you take off a very popular presenter who is close with his colleagues, they work in a very close small team, Ian Wright, Alan Shearer, et cetera, we're going to go, well, I'm not doing it without Gary. You lost Five Live Sport. Mark Chapman is a figure they've been desperate to keep at the BBC, and he refused to go on air for hours on Saturday on the radio. How did they not preempt that? And my other strategic communications question is, do you think this backfired on the Conservatives? Because there was a point where it put the policy front and centre, and that was good for the Conservatives.
Mm.
And there was a point where it totally dominated, and the actual issue of the policy had been lost and the detail of the policy had been lost. And clearly there was a point on about Sunday where the Conservatives got quite twitchy about it.
Yeah. So on your first point, the BBC were incredibly reactive on this. they weren't strategic at all. The BBC are all far, far, far too often cowed by the Daily Mail, cowed by the Daily Telegraph, cowed by the Times. And they think, because in part because they called Brexit wrong. Now, listeners, you won't have seen this, but I did massive air quotes around that. You know, they covered Brexit fairly, would be the other way of putting that. They haven't done since 2016. They haven't really looked at the... they've been so nervous of the fact that the country actually voted the way they didn't think they were going to, that they've almost refused to cover the downsides of Brexit. But the BBC are not there to give me the news I want. They're equally not there to give Lee Anderson the news he wants.
Sure, but just, I'm going to push you on this bit. How was there no forward thinking? Because that's the key thing. There was a domino effect that they clearly did not preempt.
No, I don't think they understood. I don't think that Tim Davey,
the Director General,
understands his own organisation. I think he's like a management consultant that's come in from the outside and is trying to impose a rigid sense of theory on human beings. Now, management consultants are good at times. You know, I am one sometimes. And a rigid sense of theory helps to when you're an outsider. When you're coming in to lead something, you cannot simply lead with a rigid sense of theory. You've got to have an understanding of the organic nature of your organisation. And he doesn't love the BBC. And ultimately, you can't lead a thing you don't love.
And my question on the Conservatives, do you think they did get twitchy over the weekend that suddenly it was going against them? Because there was a point where it was to their advantage and lots of people were hearing about their big policy and this row over it. And they clearly did want a row over it.
I think they thought that the polling would go against Lineker and it didn't.
Okay.
I think they thought they were on the popular side of this argument and they weren't. And I think that surprised them. And that's when they sort of shut up and went, oh, OK, none of our business. We don't.
So just quickly to wrap this up, you included some polling in your newsletter. I'm going to link to it in the show notes. So would you support or oppose banning migrants who come to the UK in small votes from ever re-entering the UK, being able to settle permanently in the UK and receiving British citizenship? That was a question asked by YouGov on March the 6th. That had 32% support and 80% somewhat support. So kind of that's a 50%, isn't it? Sort of supporting it.
Yeah.
And then your question, your point about it is about Gary Lineker, by 53 to 27%, Britons say the BBC was wrong to suspend Gary Lineker.
Yeah.
So I think that rather...
You can disagree with your football pundit without thinking he should lose his job.
Yeah. And again, to end this conversation, if it was Jane Hill or Clive Myrie tweeting those things, there is a problem.
Yeah. And there's absolutely right that those the BBC impartiality rules are much stronger around journalists.
Quite so, on the news side. Quite so. But these are people not on... These are freelancers, these are contractors on the sport and entertainment side, and the BBC should have really preempted that.
I think the BBC model of freelancing is mental and completely broken, but that's the model they've chosen. That's the model they have to live with.
Right. Talking of funding... Let's do it. We've tried to chat about sport for as long as we possibly could.
To chat about sport.
I know. This is how desperate we are. This is how desperate you are not to talk about the budget. But, I mean, when I started the introduction, you were quite rightly yawning in the background because it was a bit of a dull fest. As we've said about a whole manner of events since Rishi Sunak became the Prime Minister, dull is kind of what they're going for.
They are going for dull and managerial.
Yep.
I mean, they kind of have to because Liz Truss was, if nothing else, exciting.
Yeah, and I think you can make the point that Boris Johnson was like that as well. It was all the end of Boris Johnson, the whole 6-week period of Liz Truss was chaotic and people were just like, I've had enough. I don't care if I vote for this lot or not, but I've had enough of the chaos.
And I think that's the problem. That literal sentence, I don't care if I'm going to vote for this lot or not.
Just calm down.
Well, I think Sunak's going to get good reviews. Hunt's going to get good reviews and no votes. Well, not no votes, but fewer votes.
Yeah, I was trying to work out if there was anything in this budget that was vote shifting. I guess the thing you would have to talk about is the childcare stuff.
Oh, see, I think that's going to massively backfire on them.
I've seen takes on both sides of this. Why do you think?
Childcare, I mean, there's obviously not a bad policy. It's a policy that's not going to kick in until after the next election.
So they're not going to get
any advantage. So lots of people are going to hear about childcare and then go to the school gates.
Yep, that might well be right.
And not get what they thought they were being promised.
Okay.
And when
that's never a good combination.
Kick in, it will be credited to the next government.
Probably, because that tends to be how
that's
people
that's
do.
That's how politics works. Anything happens after an election, it's, yeah, I mean, Boris spikes. They were Ken Livingstone's idea.
Yeah, quite, no, fair point. Yeah, and Sadiq Khan's been the mayor of London for 6, 7, 8 years, and they're still called Boris spikes. Yeah, you're quite right.
Exactly.
I just want to test, before we delve into some of the policies, if we can strengthen our stomachs to do so, I want to talk about the spectacle of it, because I've found I am increasingly intolerant to the spectacle of these set piece parliamentary events. And my patience ran out very quickly when I heard Conservative MPs cheering in a rather smug way that there would be no quote unquote technical recession. Now, that is a good thing. That is a good
thing. It's a great thing. Funnily enough, they left out the bit in the OBR report that said that the living standards are going to drop by 6%, the biggest drop since they've been measuring this.
And he rushed to a contraction of just 0.2%, if that's a win. And my point is that, yes, you can cheer in Parliament that we're not having a technical recession. But we have said this point so many times, and it remains the absolute truth in politics. People have to feel it in their pocket.
Yeah.
And going, we have not had a technical recession, ain't winning you any votes unless people are feeling better.
Also, literally, as the budget was being delivered, Credit Suisse was...
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world.
And the idea that he knew or knows now that we won't be in a technical recession is for the birds, frankly.
Yeah. Well, we can hope that things turn, are positive. We can hope that, we've seen predictions improve over time.
So again, I come back to this sense that there's this economy that the government talks about and the economy that we live in.
I think that's the point I'm trying to make, really, that people have to, back the bottom line, people have to feel it. They have to see it in their bank accounts. They have to see it in their shopping trolley. Mm. And that's quite reasonably why the government have really focused on tackling inflation, which is on its way down, but
by giving very, very rich pensioners a complete buy-in.
Well, that we can come to that, but that's got nothing to do with the inflation policy. But that's what people have to feel, and the government needs to not forget that at any point. I did laugh at him, Jeremy Hunt, describing Ben Wallace as a persuasive defence secretary. They've obviously had a massive bust up over the last few weeks. That was quite fun.
He's weird. He's so weird, Jeremy Hunt. I mean, he's weird enough to have once hidden behind a tree from a journalist. This is like thing.
Listen,
that
we've all done
that.
Have you never hidden behind? You never hidden behind a tree from someone?
Have you seen how broad I am? It'd have to be a hell of an oak.
Emma.
But his big joke was about how old Eleanor Lang was.
That was such a weird moment. Yeah, I thought she responded quite well. That the jokes over about the over 50s did go on for far longer than they needed to.
I have to give a shout out here. The Fabians are doing some research at the moment into the difference between the 50 to 60 cohort and the 60 to 65 cohort.
Right.
And we always talk about the over 50s, and there's this endless emphasis on let's retrain, as if you've got 15 years ahead of you. If you're 63, you ain't got 15 years ahead of you.
Well, hopefully not in the working world. Hopefully in your life.
Yeah, that's what I mean, obviously. Yeah, hopefully you have a lot of years ahead. But also, frankly, when we talk about pensioners now, you know, lots of jokes about on the golf course. If you're a binman, if you've been spending your life in physical labour, you have fewer years ahead of you in retirement and they will be hard. And it is not okay that we talk about retirement as a middle class thing.
Well, there was definitely a sense of that throughout. I agree with you. And there was definitely that kind of theme throughout. Now, I don't think in a world where, thank goodness, many people, like your point is totally valid, but we live in a world where people are, thankfully, living longer and healthier lives.
I'm going to pull you up on that, Charlotte.
Well, let me finish and then you can. In many cases, and may want to work for longer. And it obviously is I can understand why the government are keen to encourage that. I have to confess, I don't understand the nuance of this new pension policy enough to
there
get
there is my... no nuance. It's a giveaway to very, very rich people.
And this idea that it's couched as, because of our national religion, the NHS, that it's for doctors.
That is an absolute front. And it's an affront. Yes, they absolutely can keep doctors in work longer by doing a carve out the way they have done for judges. So it would be neither new nor that challengeable because it already exists in policy. What they decided to do was give it to fucking CEOs and very, very rich people who want to hide their money away from inheritance tax into their pensions.
Well, I did see someone, again, I'm really not going to pretend to be some kind of expert in tax and pensions policy, but I did see someone suggesting this could be a rather nice inheritance tax loophole. Yeah.
It's completely an inheritance. That's all it is. It's all it is.
I mean, they are
using doctors as a cover for giving away a lot of money to the less than 1% of the wealthiest. Now, I'm going to pull you up, as I said, on life expectancy, because actually we've gone backwards.
I did see that. You're right. You're right.
29th in the world. We're a G7 country.
Didn't I say we'd gone from like 29th
in the world for life expectancy? And the life expectancy between where I live in East London and central London, there's 18 years difference.
In what way?
Me and Chelsea.
Oh, between you, fine. I'm guessing that Chelsea is doing better than you.
Yeah.
Even though that's also, as we learnt, it's not what we think of as Chelsea's, you know, Chelsea and Westminster is in of itself a quite diverse.
I'm not talking about borough by borough. I'm talking about street by street. Is street by street.
So I did see, actually, I'm glad you reminded me, I did see that drop off. Didn't we go from 6th to 29th or something?
It was
a quite significant drop off. But as a general rule, you understand the point I'm making.
I understand the point you're making, but it doesn't actually apply to our country anymore.
Well, it certainly doesn't. I think it's fair to say it doesn't apply across all communities.
No.
I mean, that's a fair point.
Which, if it doesn't apply to all communities, it doesn't apply to our country.
And yeah, fair. And I'm also, as you know, not someone who's relatively comfortable with the idea of people keeping more of the money they earn. Both.
Yeah, you're a mad right winger.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, yeah. As you can tell, yeah. That has obviously been made clear throughout us doing this show. But no, as a general, I'm comfortable with that as a concept. Keeping more of your pension or being all the things around that doesn't affront. But I'm trying to work out the politics of it.
Yeah. No, the problem the Tories have is that they are fundamentally wedded to your same concept of low taxes. But they understand more and more, far more than David Cameron and George Osborne did, that we are a country that wants a decent public sector. Excuse me.
That's you. Yeah. I think you. British people, so we do expect.
So we good public services. Those two things don't come together. We want Swedish level public sector and American level taxes. And you can't do both. There has to be a trade-off.
I'm guessing
nobody is brave enough to make the argument about that trade-off. We just keep promising both.
Forgive me for thinking out loud here, but I'm guessing if a Jeremy Hunt, a Conservative MP was sitting
here. Is that rhyming slang?
I'm guessing if I were Jeremy Hunt or a Conservative backbench MP, the answer would be the way to do what you're suggesting, because I don't think your premise is that wrong, would be that you get growth, so more people have more money and are paying more into the tax pot, even if it's a loan. Well, that might be right. But I suspect that would be their answer, right?
Their answer, except that the many of the ways to do that is to raise productivity, and that means infrastructure spending. And they haven't done any.
I'm not letting you start on infrastructure spending because this will be a 2-hour show. I'm not letting you start on that.
That's ultimately, you have to invest, and they're not investing.
I'm not going to let you do it. there's a couple of other bits I wanted to talk about. One bit I thought it slightly got swept over, but was quite a good thing to hear, was this clamp down on the kind of enforced prepayment meters and the higher rates.
Yes.
It's been a huge issue. I mean, I appreciate it doesn't help people who have suffered this winter, but that doesn't mean it wasn't right to do.
No, that was good. The change on nuclear power was good. I'm trying to be...
Wait, what? Emma Bunnell, nuclear power supporter?
No, I've completely done a 180 on nuclear power. I'm fundamentally unilateralist on nuclear weapons. It's my one really lefty shibboleth. And I always will be. We do not need to be a nuclear state.
I can see your CND badge now. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no, I was a massive CND supporter. I think they drifted into issues that were not about nuclear disarmament, and so I stopped supporting them. But
that was quite a dramatic move that was announced there, the kind of announcement of new plants and new this smaller kind of...
I used to run CERA, and when I did, I don't know where they stand now, but they were against nuclear power being part of the mix. I was wrong. I was wrong.
Clipping that.
I think it's really important. You should clip that, because it's really important that when we're wrong, we say so. And we don't get wedded to be embarrassed by saying we're wrong.
And also, we do need to make a differentiation very seriously between nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And nuclear power.
And nuclear power is not ideal, but it's a hell of a sight better than climate change. And I do think that ultimately renewables is the way, but we do need something that is reliable as a baseline, certainly in the in-between 100 years or so. And that's got to be nuclear. It's got to be. There isn't another option.
So those and the childcare policy were the two kind of big things that stood out for me.
Policy is, I don't think, is that good, because what it is a whole lot of window dressing. And if you look...
No, but it caught attention.
It caught attention, but it's going to disappoint. And that's what scares me. There's no money in it. They're expecting the wraparound childcare for schools, for example, is unfunded. If you think schools have got a whole load of money to do a whole load more than they're already doing, Jesus Christ, where have you been?
No. There was a couple of other bits that stuck out to me. Obviously, my Lib Dem spidey senses started twitching when they started talking about a potholes fund.
Do you want to go and point at things glumly?
I might. Well, I'll have to, just to make myself feel better. It was either the most Lib Dem or the most British thing I've ever heard, but fair enough. These things do matter.
I think that's really symbolic in a way, though, isn't it? Yeah. We're going to come along and give a crap fix to the things we've broken.
Well, but look, roads get damaged. Rather
they've
got
than
to be
invest
fixed.
In infrastructure.
Emma, listen, roads get damaged. I suppose we have to fix them. Just to sum it up, I want to talk about the tone of the whole thing, because I said to you when we previewed the budget, I wanted less misery, I wanted a little bit of optimism. It was a little bit better.
He was trying to be optimistic. He was definitely, those were the headlines he wanted. They were quite a mixed bag. I was doing the paper review on GB News yesterday morning, and it was a very mixed bag.
Yes, it was. I mean, I just want to point out that apparently I saw the front page of the Financial Times and it did not lead on the budget.
No,
which is pretty staggering.
Neither did the Telegraph.
Staggering. And then there was another line that I wanted to just sum up our discussion on this on. Hunt's, one of his final lines was, he wanted to strengthen our society as well as strengthen our economy. And my red alert went off that is the election, isn't it? That's their election plan. You need a strong economy to have a strong society, and we're going to do both.
But I mean, how? There was no how there.
I mean, there by definition there was, because there was a budget,
but it was tinkering. Even
it was
so,
a bit tinkering.
I was on GB News with the deputy editor of The Spectator, and he called it a tinkering budget.
Yeah, I think that is a fair comment.
It just didn't feel like, here's our offer to the country of who we are. I still don't know what Sunak and Hunt's offer to the country is. And we constantly talk about Labour not fleshing out their details. And yet, these are the people in power. They've actually got the ability to do stuff.
And they have done the calming down bit, but they're very quickly going to have to pivot to a big, bold offer if they want to have any chance. Let's quickly look ahead, because we've got the SNP leadership race coming to its crescendo, if we could put it like that. So SNP members, you were telling me before there's been a huge exodus of members.
Yeah, they've lost 30,000 members between.
So they
were trying not to publish their membership numbers, and now we know why. So since the last time their membership numbers were published, and now they've lost around 30,000.
It's thought to be about 104,000 members who are entitled to vote. Voting open, ballots open on the 13th of March, so the start of the week we're recording this.
Yeah.
Will end on the 27th of March. We'll obviously cover it when we come back to that. But the whole thing has got very nasty. And I'm guessing in this final week where people actually have their ballots, this is going to be a quite unpleasant few days.
I mean, the people who knew exactly who they were going to vote for have already voted.
Correct.
So there's going to be some really nasty scrapping, I suspect, between the three candidates.
Well, we've already heard Kate Forbes, who had a very rocky time at the beginning of the campaign, which we discussed, making claims about vote rigging, and she wants independent observers.
She's got full Trump, which is interesting. I mean, but to be honest, I kind of get it, because Humza Yousaf is quite clearly Nicola Sturgeon's favoured candidate.
And the deputy leader of the SNP, Mari Black, has backed him, hasn't she?
And the deputy leader has backed him.
In Westminster.
Nicola Sturgeon's husband is the chief executive of the SNP. Just weird.
Keeping it in the family?
Well, keeping it in the family is all very well if you're a grocer. It's less good if you're running a political party.
Yeah. Anyway, I think this week might get very feisty. I think we're going to hear some rather nasty things coming out of it. And then we're obviously going to have to see the process of them cleaning up, making nice. And, you know, they've got to move forward after this. We've seen this with the Conservative Party. We've seen it with the Labour Party. Whenever there's a leadership election, the tensions have to be ironed out afterwards.
They do. I mean, the thing about the SNP is that they're famously disciplined. But that dam has burst.
Yes.
What happens now will be, can they rebuild the dam? Will they come back together, or will they just continue to snipe? What will happen with Alva? All of these things are therefore the discussion. because I just genuinely don't know how they put this back together again.
Yeah, it's all going to be very interesting to watch, and we will cover it here on House of Comments. Emma, always a pleasure. Where can people keep up with you?
I'm on Twitter at @EmmaBurnell_, and I have a Substack called Hard Thinking on the Soft Left.
I'm at Charlotte A. Henry on Twitter. You can find me at theaddition.substack.com. You can find House of Comments at HOC Pod on Twitter as well. So please join us there. Look for House of Comments on Twitter and come join us. Tell us what you want us to discuss. If you think your friends and family would enjoy the show, send it over to them. And we'll see you next week.